Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM. It's a great day just to greet you and just to bless our Heavenly Father today. I know we're going into the Thanksgiving holiday, and so it's just a blessing to greet each and every one of you. I'm honored today to be on the air live today with a good friend who I work with on the Biden campaign. But before we go any further, let's be very cautious and careful as we celebrate this Thanksgiving holiday. The coronavirus counts of those who are infected are increasing even as we're speaking. It was reported yesterday, I believe, on ESPN, between 8 to 9 Baltimore Ravens football players have contracted the coronavirus, tested positive. So as we are gathering for our Thanksgiving holiday, although we're coming together, you know, with family and friends, let's be cautious and careful, and let's remember the over 250,000 lives that have been lost. I'll lift up Lorenzo Logic Johnson, my fraternity brother, who passed away in the early spring out of Queens, New York, of this coronavirus. So let's take this serious. I have on the line with me today Manuel Guzman out of Reading, PA. He is now the state representative of Reading, elected into this position back in about a couple weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken. So, hey, Manny, how you doing?
Hey, Reverend. I'm doing very well, and it's a pleasure and honor to be speaking with you today.
Oh, good. Before we go any further, let's tell the readers, not readers, I'm sorry, let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So this journey for me, Rev, started back in 2008. I was a sophomore at Kutztown University, and you know, I had this crush on this girl. I was crushing on this girl, Rev. And one day she invited me to this meeting, and of course, you know, I wanted to spend time with her, so I'm like, all right, let's go. And it so happens that that meeting was for then Senator Barack Obama, presidential campaign at Kutztown University, and that's where I fell in love with the process, not only of politics but of community organizing. And so that's really where I got my first start in this game, working as a then volunteer for then Senator Obama, 2008. And in 2012, I actually was a field organizer here in Pennsylvania and in Ohio working for the Obama campaign. And like I said, that's really where I fell in love with the electoral process. You know, at that point, seeing, you know, Barack Obama, I saw somebody who looked like me, who talked like me, who came from the same environment that I came from, and even had a funny name, right? who was being considered to be the president of the United States and ultimately winning.
Right.
And so, for me, that was the genesis of it. And then, you know, after I came back home from Kutztown, in about 2012, 2013, for those of you who don't know, the city of Reading, you know, it's considered one of the most impoverished cities in the entire country. In fact, in 2011, the New York Times ran a huge article about how we were the number one most impoverished city in the entire country. And, you know, like a lot of big cities, like a lot of urban cities, there's a lot of institutional problems. And, you know, specifically at that time, Rev, there were issues with our local school board here in the city of Reading. They were on the verge of state takeover. And so me coming back out of college, 2013, I'm looking at the landscape in the city of Reading, and I'm thinking, okay, how can I use the skills that I've learned as an organizer, learning under the Obama campaign, both in 2008 and 2012, and how can I use those skills to better my community, right? Better my hometown, you know, city that I love. And so in 2013, Rev, I decided to run my first political campaign, and I ran to be a Reading school board member, and I won that election. That was my first try, and I won. And I served the city of Reading as a school board member from 2013 until 2017. And in the meantime, you know, throughout those time periods, I've continued to not only help Democrats and people that I love care about here in the city of Reading run for office, whether it's city council, school board, or mayor, you know, I've really just devoted myself to helping to elect people who come from environments that I come from. Because unfortunately, at a lot of these decision-making tables, Rev. There are not a lot of people that look like us that come from the same environments that we come from. And so you see that lacking in the policy that some of these institutions pass. So I've just made it my life work to help to use the skills that I've learned in organizing to help other people get elected. And in 2017, had the awesome, you know, after doing all of this for free, Rev, this has been,
right,
you know, more than 10 years of me working on campaigns as a volunteer, never getting paid a dollar to do it, just doing it out of the love for my community. In 2017, I was presented the opportunity to become the coalition's director for the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. And in that role, I was in charge of helping, and in that case, there was a gubernatorial election. So Tom Wolf was running for re-election, and so was Senator Bob Casey. And so in that role, I was in charge of ensuring that brown and black communities across the Commonwealth were being engaged, were being touched, were being talked to. And that was really the first time that I've seen not only the Democratic Party, but also the state local parties really start to embrace brown and black voters in a way that I've seen before. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that leads me to 2020, which is where we are now. You know, I was working with you, Rev. I was the right. Joe Biden, I was a Joe Biden Latino director, and also I was moonlighting as a candidate for state representative here in the city of Redding. And I'm happy to say that we won two times, Rev. We got Joe Biden over the finish line, and I won my race to become the first Latino to represent my city, Harrisburg.
Well, I want to say this personally, you and to shout out to you and Keva Clark. It was a blessing and honor to work with the both of you on the Biden campaign. I remember my interview with the both of you. It's funny now, but I was like, I can't mess this interview up. It was a Zoom interview, and I decided, man, it was like 95, 100 degrees outside, and I decided to interview with the both of you with a suit jacket on in my office in the basement. And man, I was sweating down there. It was hot outside and everything. And I was just like, I'm not going to come to this interview casual because I wanted the position. But man, I wasn't sweating because of the interview. I was nervous, but I was sweating because it was hot outside, man. And I'm in my office in a basement with a suit jacket on interviewing. I can admit that now the campaign is over. Yeah. Hey, so it's a
blessing. I remember that. You did well, Rev, and I mean, you know, part of the reason why, you know, we made the decision to help bring you on board was, you know, we saw your ability to be able to organize folks and be able to jump right into the role and make it your own. And I think you did that along the way.
Yeah, it was an interesting journey. I thank God for the experience. It wasn't an easy journey. It was great working for the campaign, but you know, getting out in the field, and you know this through community organizing, because both of us are community organizers, man. You hit some terrains, man, that's just like, wow. You know what I mean? And but would I do it all over again? Yes. This is an experience of, if I'm ever blessed to have grandchildren, this is an experience I can share with my grandchildren that, you know, we made history. Not only did we help get Joe Biden in office, but we worked on the first digital campaign, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've worked on the first digital campaign, and I'll take that to my grave, hopefully no time soon, but to be
able, pioneers.
Yeah,
pioneers.
Yeah. And and as I shared before we get into the interview, what I shared,
sure,
in a workshop and everything is that I think one of the constructive criticisms I have about the Biden campaign per se, and I say positive constructive criticism, I don't think they did enough to highlight the millennials that they had working on their campaign. You know what I mean? Because in the community, the millennials were saying, oh, Biden don't connect with us and stuff like that. And I'm saying to myself, and I was saying to some of them, do you know how many millennials he has working for him? You know what I mean? That's doing an effective job carrying out the message. And I you know, if hindsight is 2020, if we could go back and do it again, I would say, hey man, highlight the millennials, the diverse millennials that was working for the Biden campaign. So it was a blessing, man. It was a blessing, honor working with you, Keva, Dan, Abu, Chris, Manjot, Jordan. I might be forgetting someone. God forgive
Harney.
Harney. Yeah, Harney, yes. I knew I was forgetting. And Salima as well. It was a blessing,
yep,
working with all of you. So it's interesting.
It's a lot of fun, man. Rev, it's a lot of fun working on presidential. I mean, it's a lot of hard work, as I'm sure you saw.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the thrill and the rush of a campaign is, I'm a competitive person by nature. Although I can't play sports to save my life. I mean, my jump shot been broken since I was 12 years old. But that's the one thing that I really love and appreciate about campaigns and politics, right, is also the competitive nature of it, right? Is that, at the end of the day, we all knew that we had one shot at this, and that was November 3rd. Mm-hmm. And so, it was very stressful, but it was also really exciting and, thrilling to, be a part of not only turning Pennsylvania blue again, but also being able to win Pennsylvania by such a big margin the way that we did that. And the reason we did that is because, and I said this, and I've said this to all the top leadership, but quite frankly, my opinion is that the coalition team really is what drove the narrative in Pennsylvania. Because we won because brown and black voters came out to vote. And that was large in part for the work that we did over the last couple of months.
Yeah, you just said something, and I shared it at the end with some folks on the campaign. You said we just had one shot. And the hip-hop song that constantly motivated me or kept motivating me through this campaign was Eminem's Lose Yourself, because in that hip-hop song, he kept saying, you have one shot. And every time, I get into a little funk or a mode and everything, and it's kind of probably is like, yo, Rev talking about hip-hop, yeah, I'm a hip-hop fiend, you know what I mean? And so, anytime I get, into a mode where I need, to get pumped up, if it's not LL Cool J, Mama Said Knock You Out, or Jack the Ripper, those two songs is like my motivational songs I use when I work out in the gym. When I really need that extra push, it's Eminem, Lose Yourself. And I always thrive on that point. You only have one shot. And that was my thriving engine. We only got one shot to get this man in office. And so there was no day, there was no stone unturned. Every day was a day of opportunity. We worked that campaign, no days off. They didn't tell us they didn't tell us you couldn't take a day off. It was like we were so entrenched in that.
It was strongly implied that we wasn't going to get any days off.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely correct about that. And we were in the midst of it. And, I didn't even think I would shed any tears after it was over with. I was just like, okay, when we get across the finish line, we get across the finish line. We got him in office. I'm the type, I'm going to go on to the next assignment. And then, the day of the election, for those who are, checking us out, Facebook Live, we're going to get into the subject. But the day of the election, the phone calls I started to get was positively overwhelming. That had me in tears. We didn't, the election wasn't even determined yet. And it was like, Rev, I really appreciate the hard work that you did. Thank you. It was a lot of thank yous coming in. And then when the election was determined, all of a sudden, it was like the phone calls that came in, thank you. The email messages, the Facebook messages that came through, thank you. It was so many thank yous that came through. Even my colleague that I work with at Baki Graduate University, it's an online school, but, she's in France. And she, hit me up on WhatsApp, France, and my former student from Nigeria, who has his doctorate and he has his doctorate in ministry. He hit me up and everything. And so just to be able to see, globally, just the impact that has occurred throughout this election, man, this was a blessing. But before we go any further, we're 15 minutes to the hour. We're going to go into a one-minute station break. You're listening to Conversation Unplugged with Reverend Dr. Wayne and Weathers on WWDB 860 AM.
Women Heart is in a race to save lives. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. It's 80% preventable, if you know the facts. Millions of women are living with or at risk of different types of heart disease, like AFib, which is a type of irregular heartbeat. It affects both women and men, but women with AFib have a higher risk of stroke and death than men. Get educated. See your doctor. Know the facts. Diet and exercise are key to staying healthy. Know the risks. Women Heart does something really unique, solely focusing on women and providing peer-to-peer support. To win this race, we all have to do it together. Our hearts beat as one. To learn more, visit womenheart.org.
We're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM. You listen to Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers with my guest, Manny Guzman, state representative elected to the House of Representatives in the state of Pennsylvania in Reading, PA. Before I get into the subject, I do this every time, Manny. I have to give a shout out to my oldest daughter, Jasmine Nicole Weathers. She was the one who produced, wrote, sang the intro to the radio show, Conversation Unplugged. So when you hear the music playing, the intro, the song being sung, she wrote it, she sung it, she produced it, she did all of that. So to my oldest daughter, Jasmine Nicole Weathers, shout out to you. I know you can really make it to the industry. So all that being said, we talked about the election. What's very interesting here is lately I saw Rudy Giuliani's Circus of a Press Interview. That's what I'll call it, Circus of a Press Interview. And what offended me as a person of color was he referred to the My Cousin Vinny movie in regards to tossing out votes. And he talked about in this movie here, there was one particular scene. Now, mind you, I'm a big fan of that movie, My Cousin Vinny. I've seen that movie about umpteen times. You know, when it came out on video when I rented it at Blockbusters, I'm tracing my age now up until now. Yeah. And so when he said that, you know, like when a person asked the person on the witness stand, how many fingers did you see? And she said, I saw two. But then when she put on her when a person put on their glasses, she could only see one. Right. And so I said right then and there, as I was talking to my wife, who's in the studio with us now, I said, see, that's one of those racial dog whistles. Because for those who don't know, if you haven't seen the movie My Cousin Vinny, who Giuliani was referring to was a senior African-American woman who was on the witness stand. And so what he's implying through entertainment is that, you know, that she could not tell her fingers, which fingers, because she could not see or she improperly made a bad decision. So all that being said, with the basically the votes have been certified, Donald Trump and his minions is trying to steal black and brown votes. And that's a subject today, because if the black and brown vote wasn't important, then they would not try to steal our votes. Recently in Michigan, as they were attempting to certify the votes, which is now certified, but in Wayne County, which is Detroit, which I have a lot of family members that lives in Detroit, there was two Republicans that tried to stop the certification of the votes in Detroit. That's a high concentration of African Americans. So I wanted to ask you a question, Manny. Why is there such energy generated? The will of the people have been determined. Vice President Joe Biden is now the president-elect. He will be installed January 20th, 2021. So why is there such an effort to devalue or to take away the importance of black brown voters? Why are they trying to devalue the black brown voters as if they are invisible or it's practically impossible for them to make an intelligent decision to vote Donald Trump out of office?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Rev, that there's multiple layers to that, right? I mean, I think number one, the superficial layer, of course, is that they know the math. They look at the math. They see that in cities like Philly and cities like Reading and cities like Pittsburgh, Erie, the truth of the matter is that while there's a small percentage of brown and black folks that are registered Republicans, the vast majority of folks are registered as Democrats. Mm-hmm. And so they look at it simply from a superficial level, and then there's other levels underneath it in terms of there's just more of us than there are of them, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, this is something that's symptomatic and emblematic of what Republicans have tried to do, you know, at least over the last 10, 15 years with, you know, letting the Voting Rights Act die and not, not reviving that and not making that still the law of the land. And so, you know, and here, even here in Pennsylvania, you know, Republicans themselves have tried to do everything and everything that they can do to make it harder, not easier, for brown and black folks to vote. Whether it's trying to pass a voter ID law, whether it's, you know, trying to make folks, you know, have to bring in their ID to come and vote, right? You know, all those things are barriers that make it much more difficult for poor brown and black folks to go out to vote. So that's designed with an intent. That's designed with suppressing the numbers and ensuring that less brown and black folks come out to vote, the more their base comes out to vote, then, you know, ultimately they end up winning. And I think it's important also to note that this is a zero-sum game, right? Like, as I said earlier, you only get one shot, election day. And so in a lot of ways, you know, some of these suppression tactics, they do this because they recognize that because they only have one shot at this, they need to stack the deck as much as they can in their favor and their advantage in order to have a shot and win. That's the superficial level. I would say, you know, and as the saying goes, right, you know, you only see 10% of an iceberg, 90% of it is underwater.
Right.
And, you know, I would say that the underwater portion of that iceberg is still steeped in, you know, our original sin of slavery. It's still steeped in racism. It's still steeped in Jim Crow, right? That where, unfortunately, and you saw the results, even though Joe Biden won, he got more votes than any other presidential candidate in history. Right. Donald Trump got the second highest vote ever in history, right? With 73 million people. So you gotta put that into context, Rev, that you got 73 million Americans who believe in what Donald Trump believes in. And that's a scary thought. I mean, I don't want to overgeneralize and cast aspersions over 73 million people, right? Because I'll go out and say that not all 73 million of those people are racist, or have racist tendencies in their body. But I would say that a sizable portion of that are racist. You know, it's alarming that, you know, that many people, 73 million people, voted to keep a demagogue in office, voted to keep a sexist in office, a misogynist, a racist, a whistleblower. So, you know, these things run real deep in our society. They run deep in our conscious. And as brown and black folks, like, we're hyper vigilant to it because we know it, we see it, like, and we call the BS when we see it. But unfortunately, as I said earlier, Rev, there's not many of us on these seats, on policymaking boards, on government. You know, for example, yes, I was humbled and honored to be elected to be a state representative here in Reading, but I'm only three Latinos out of a million. There's a million Latinos in the state of Pennsylvania, and there's only three Latinos in the Pennsylvania House.
Wow.
You know, so our racial diversity, even in the black community, in terms of representation in the House of Representatives, or even in local levels of government outside of Philadelphia, right? You come to Reading, you know, our city council is mostly white, county commissioners are white. I mean, you go across the state of Pennsylvania and you see that there's not a lot of racial diversity that make up these bodies. And in a lot of ways, those policies, those tendencies will continue to perpetuate because of that.
So here's a question. I know we're to talk about trying to steal black and brown votes in PA, but you raise a very important, you raise a, what you basically highlighted is very informative. So it leads me to raise a very important question. And here's this very important question. There's over 1 million Latinos in the state of PA, but only three represented in the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania. There are many black and brown individuals in the state of Pennsylvania, but they're not represented at the state congressional or state senate level. So what is it going to take for us that has a sizable amount of number, black and brown, individuals in the state of PA. What is it going to take for us to begin to either integrate these particular areas or break down the barriers to get those particular areas in order for us to be represented at the state level? I was saddened when Nina Ma did not win her race, you know. I was very saddened when she didn't win. So again, what is it going to take? We have you, we have Jordan Harris, we have Cherie Street, we have Donna Bullock.
Joanna McClinton, who's going to be she's the first woman and the first black woman to be a minority leader in the House of Representatives.
And then I can't leave out Vincent Hughes also. We have Vincent Hughes. And there are plenty
of... Or Senator Street. Don't leave him out. He might be tight.
Most definitely. No, I mentioned his name earlier. Senator Cherie Street.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, and there are plenty more that I may be leaving out, not intentionally, just going off the top of my head. You know, there are good state reps and state senators that are doing remarkable. I'm looking at his name out right now out of Montgomery County. Art Hayes. You know,
yes.
can't leave out Art Hayes. And they're doing great work in that area, but yet, what is it going to take to get more Art Hayes and Vincent Hughes's and Donna Bullock's and Cherie Streets and Jordan Harris and Joanna McClintock and you and others? What is it going to do to take to get more black and brown individuals elected into these positions at the state as well as the Senate?
Yeah, I mean, I would say number one, within our own respective communities, we got to get out of our own way. Mm-hmm. And I've seen too many times in brown and black communities, because I've been across the entire Commonwealth in brown and black communities where they're, you know, the level of infighting is just like ridiculous, right? Where in places like Philadelphia, which is a minority city, and yet we've never, you know, we haven't had somebody of color be, besides, you know, Mayor Street, right, and Mayor Nutter, right. But post that, who's the leader that can step in and could run and win there in Philly? The same is here in Reading, in Allentown, in Bethlehem, in Erie. So I would say number one, folks within those respective communities need to have an open and honest conversation with the other community leaders and figure out, number one, how do we squash any of the beefs that we have, right? Because unfortunately, there's a lot of beefs, and you know, Rev, stepping into the political game, you know, you find out that people have problems or beef with everybody. And you're like, you know, I got a job to do, right? How do we make this happen?
Right.
So I think that's number one, right? Is figuring out how do we bring down some of those infighting. And the truth is that, you know, like physics, right? You know, the more our egos expand and the more we, you know, the more people become full of themselves and full with power, right? You know, the chances that ego is going to expand and collide with other atoms in physics, right? Well, colliding with other egos within the city. So, you know, I think that's also the second part of it, is understanding that representation is not enough anymore, right?
Right.
So yeah, it's great that we have Joanna there. It's great that we have Jordan. It's great that we have me and Senator Haywood and Senator Street. But the peoples within our respective community, that representation is at face value, right? So now they want us to see what can we do collectively to start making. And I think the best way we can do that within our respective communities is by helping to build the bench within our respective communities. And what do I mean by that, Rev? I mean that chances are, if you're a first-time candidate running for Congress or state legislature, you know, if it's your first campaign, you know, the odds are against you, right?
Right.
But if you're a school board member, if you're a city council member, if you're someone who already has some policy and legislative knowledge, then that task becomes, I won't say it becomes easier, but it becomes much more clear for people to want to come and support you. And so I think that in my position, even though I'm the state rep representing the city of Reading and Harrisburg, I understand that my destiny, my history is linked to what goes on in Philly, what goes on in Reading, what goes on in Allentown. And so my commitment is to help find brown and black candidates of color, mentor them, and encourage them to run for local office, mm-hmm. to help build that bench so that when there's a seat that opens up in Allentown or in York City or in Erie, because the one thing I could tell you, Rev, is that I'm renting this seat. You know, this state representative seat, it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people, and I'm renting it. My time is very finite. And so with that being said, we have to make sure that we train the next generation of leaders, brown and black leaders, who can step into these roles when our times are done, as they eventually will be. And so I think that's what we do. That's how we build our political power within these respective communities. We stop the infighting, we check our egos, and then we recruit, support, and win with candidates to help build our bench for the future.
Wow. It is 31 minutes past the hour. We're going to go to a station break on WWDB 860 AM. You listen to Conversation Unplugged with Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers with our guest, State Rep Manuel Guzman out of Reading, PA.
Do you let other people order for you at a restaurant?
He'll have the somol dionese.
No, I won't. Or pick the movie you're going to see.
She'd like a ticket to Attack on Rage Mountain.
Really?
Yeah, come on. So why would you let others make all the important decisions about how your life is going to be when you get older? I mean, is it okay with you if your kids decide where you're going to live?
My kids? Are you ready?
Are you kidding?
Or perfect strangers choose who'll be taking care of you?
Not gonna happen.
No, Better visit longtermcare.gov, the trusted information site that helps you find your own path forward without selling you anything. It takes you step by step through everything you need to consider about aging and all your options. Longtermcare.gov. Stay in charge by planning now or pay later.
How about a mohawk?
How about a mohawk? How about I put my foot right... Oh, hi, honey.
Welcome back to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM. You're listening to Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers with our guest, State Rep Manny Guzman out of Reading, PA. Manny, it was reported on ABC News. I'll read it verbatim. Pennsylvania officials asked a federal appeals court Tuesday to put an end to the Trump campaign legal challenges of an election that has now been certified and in their view, resolved. The Trump campaign present demand to set aside millions of potentially tens of thousands of lawfully cast ballots without a single plausible factual allegation to back up this extraordinary request should be swiftly rejected, says the new filing on behalf of Allegheny, Philadelphia, Chester, and Montgomery counties. It goes on to say the case before the Third Circuit of Appeals appears to be on a fast track with parties given just 24 hours to submit their argument. And if this ruling goes against the president, as more than two dozen rulings have to date, Democrats believe that one of the few remaining doors of Trump to contest the 2020 presidential contest will be shut. Before we go any further, you worked on the Biden campaign. We reported to you in Kiva. So I just need to ask these questions, and I hope they're not offensive, but let me just ask these questions.
No, let's do it.
In our coalition's meeting, did you or Kiva ever instruct us to, to go to voters and ask them to fraudulently cast their votes?
100%.
Yeah, never.
Never.
Have you ever in our staff meetings trained us to go out to get the voters to do something fraudulent in order to win?
Never.
Right. Never. Now, I just got to ask this also. I'm being cynical.
Sure.
But in our water cooler meetings and our meetings with the national directors and things of that nature, did they ever tell us to go out and to fraudulently cast mail-in ballots and get dead people to resurrect themselves from the grave just to get up out the cemetery, cast the ballot, and go back? No, let me rephrase this question. Did they ever train us to go to the cemetery, dig up the grave, get the skeletons, pieces of individuals, get them to sign it, and then put the dirt back over the casket and then go back to the place where you got the early voting sites and then cast the ballots? Were we ever told to do that?
We were never told to do that. And in fact, we were all working remotely, so that would be pretty tough to do, to organize.
Yeah, yeah. So what I'm getting at is these lawsuits are stupid.
they're stupid, right? But they're but there's also a purpose behind them, right? And the purpose is that, at least in my opinion, I think the president knows he's going to lose these cases. He's betting on losing.
Right.
He's betting on these courts deciding on these cases as fast as possible, because quite frankly, it benefits him, because ultimately he wants these cases to go before the Supreme Court.
Right. Right.
That's his end game, is the Supreme Court. And the quicker he can get it to the Supreme Court before January 20th, you know, the quicker, he thinks he's going to have a legal win that's going to allow him to remain president, which is why the appointment of, you know, Justice Amy Barrett was so crucial, right? I mean, you remember it,
Rev.
It was literally in the middle, right within the last days of the campaign, where he nominated after Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away, unfortunately. I think she passed away, late September, early October?
Yeah, I think late August, to be exact.
Yeah, and so you might be right. And so they jammed that Supreme Court nomination in. And so that's the fear that I have, right? And I don't want to be alarmist, but the truth of the matter is that I believe the Trump campaign legal team knows that they don't have a case, and they're just hoping that these judges can quickly resolve these cases so that they can get it in front of the Supreme Court. To ultimately make that decision like they made in 2000, Gore versus Bush in Florida.
Yeah, I think it's going to be harder now because PA has certified their votes. Michigan has certified their votes. And so the two big states that he needed to, try to steal these votes from would be PA, Wisconsin, as well as Michigan. And right now, Pennsylvania has certified their votes. Michigan has certified their votes. It looks like Wisconsin is on their way of certifying their votes, but it also looked like he's trying to raise a legal challenge in order for that not to happen. But you got Pennsylvania.
He's trying. I mean, his goal is to try to invalidate ballots, right? So he'll ask the Supreme Court to overrule the certification and to then invalidate mail-in ballots or whatever the case is. And so, I mean, that's a really a cynical viewpoint, and I hope that doesn't play itself out, quite frankly, because I don't know if our country is ready for that type of, because even right now with Trump and, you know, and I'm sure you know this, but Trump and Giuliani are actually going to be in Gettysburg today at a press conference that Senator Doug Mastriano is hosting, to continue the hype machine of election fraud. And that's happening today in Gettysburg.
Wow.
The president is coming to Gettysburg with Rudy Giuliani to continue to talk about the fraud, quote unquote fraud, that happened during this election cycle. So he's already making cracks in that concrete, and I think the cracks are really starting to show. And if that argument is to be presented to the Supreme Court, with the politically biased Supreme Court that I think we have now, I don't know if our country is ready for that type of world, quite frankly.
So here's an interesting observation. So Trump is with Giuliani at Gettysburg today,
yep.
And he was on the golf course this past weekend, and he's spending more time either on the golf course or fighting an animated election fraud, but has done nothing to attempt to reverse the COVID infections as well as the COVID deaths in America.
And in fact, they've been surging.
Say that again.
You know, that the cases have continued to surge,
right,
even here in Pennsylvania,
right.
Right? That used to be a model for how well we've done with keeping the COVID cases. And you're right. You know, this guy, you know, it really ticks me off, and I say ticked because I don't want to say the other word, but I watch the news and I'm like, so many people have gotten COVID. I personally myself got COVID about a month ago now.
I didn't know that.
And
wow.
Yeah, well, that's what if you remember, Rev, the last week of the campaign, I was really sick,
right,
which is why I didn't participate in a lot of the meetings towards about the last week, because there was about a week's time where I was literally laid out because of COVID.
Wow.
And, you know, I consider myself a relatively healthy, you know, I don't have any pre-existing conditions, and it had me laid out for about a week. And so I know firsthand, this virus, I felt it, why it has killed over 250,000 people, Americans. This is not a joke. And this guy, he goes out, this president, he goes, he plays golf while people are still dying, while people are still getting infected. And there's no comprehensive plan. And then on top of that, Rev, and I'm also going to add on top of that, you also have millions of people who are facing economic uncertainty. Mm-hmm. When was that last stimulus that was passed? That last stimulus was passed 6 months ago, $1,200, right?
Right.
Well, you know, here we are 6 months later going into a holiday season, and you have millions of people, thousands of people in my district who are either unemployed or underemployed and have no income and have no way and are facing a variety of issues, whether it's eviction, whether it's food insecurity issues, whether it's their own health because they don't have health cover. This is a monumental crash storm of epic proportion, and history is not going to be kind on this president. When we look back 50 years from now, right, if the Lord blesses me with 50 years, when we look back on this time 50 years from now, I really think that the worldview is not going to have a very positive outlook on the Trump president because of it's a failure at, you know, epic proportion.
Yeah, you said something in regards to, and this is an add-on and not a takeaway, you said something about the stimulus package that last time it was passed was back in, if I'm not mistaken, back in March, to be exact.
Yeah, March.
And so I would add to that, you know, the stimulus package wasn't passed, well, last time it was passed back was March of 2020. I would also know I have a relative, you know, who had to struggle to get their unemployment filed in April in the state of Delaware. And I have to check, up until now has not received it. Maybe they may have received it last week. You got me. And so to file for your unemployment in April and then haven't received it as of March of October, so that's May, June, July, August, September, October, no, going into November, still trying to get your unemployment. You got me. Doesn't make any sense.
It's a damn shame. I'm sorry for saying the word damn, but it's a damn shame. And in fact, me walking into my new role as a state rep here in the city of Reading, I just found out the other day that there are over 120 people in my district who haven't gotten their unemployment check since March.
Just so
You know, wow. I'm walking into this crap storm where now, as an incoming state rep, I have to figure out where are these people at in the process, because I have 120 people, 120 families potentially, who haven't gotten a single dollar in the last 6 months.
You're right. Yes. And my relative is one of them in Delaware, in the state of Delaware.
It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. You know, the president doesn't seem to care. Mitch McConnell from the Senate, you know, they dismissed the Senate here for the Christmas holiday. You know, they won't be back until January.
Right.
And so in the meantime, what do millions of poor brown, black, and white folks do? No one talks about that.
No, they don't. Before we go to station break, on Facebook Live, Pastor James Isaac, pastor in North Carolina, to be exact. I believe that's Oxford, North Carolina, says, good morning, Dr. Weathers. Hey, good shout out, Pastor Isaac. Your mother has always been a jewel in my life. When I was working in Durham, North Carolina, she's gone from labor to reward back in the mid-2000s. But Pastor Isaac, your mother would literally come to the building where I was working at when I was an executive director of a nonprofit, and she would either walk and pray over the building or just come in the office and pray for me and the staff as well. So that I will always, you know, that I always cherish what your mother did in my heart. So, you know, great shout out. We're 45 minutes to the hour right now. We're going to take one more station break on Conversation Unplugged.
Some kids never smile. They're embarrassed by their crooked teeth. They want braces like the other kids, but their families can't afford them. Some may even try to straighten their teeth themselves. That can make everything worse. Luckily, there's Donated Orthodontic Services, a program from the American Association of Orthodontists. It helps provide orthodontic treatment to kids and teens whose families can't afford it. For kids who apply, are approved, and are matched with a volunteer orthodontist, it can be life-changing. Their treatment is in the hands of an expert, a licensed local orthodontic specialist who improves their smiles by correctly aligning teeth and jaws. Some kids think they'll never smile again, but Donated Orthodontic Services may help them smile with confidence. To link to the application and eligibility requirements, visit aaoinfo.org.
We're back on Conversation Unplugged, WWDB 860 AM on Conversation Unplugged. I am the host, Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. We have our guest, State Rep Manny Guzman out of Reading, PA, also worked on as the coalition's director on the Biden campaign, which I served under his leadership with also our coalition's director, Kiva Clark. And so we're back on Conversation Unplugged. There's an attorney, a Philadelphia attorney, Aronchik, to be exact, says... he argued the case against Giuliani, and he said he will wait to hear what the appeal court says before he can declare any sort of victory in the legal battle. He goes on to say, and I quote, "I will say from the rooftops that the American public should be immensely proud that we have an independent judiciary. We operate under the rule of law and not the rule of the soapbox from the driveway of the Four Seasons landscaping." One person who appears not to believe the legal battle was coming to an end is President Trump. In a series of tweets in recent days, the president and his allies have pushed for an ongoing effort to challenge the results of the election in court. In one late-night tweet Monday, the president said his team is moving full speed ahead. On Tuesday morning, he promised a big lawsuit will be filed soon. So here's my observation. Manny, here's my observation, State Rep. Guzman. It's interesting. So there was assistance by Russia back in 2016 to steal the election. And now we got Trump now trying to steal the election, not from just Americans, but trying to steal the election from black and brown individuals who voted against him. So that makes an indictment about politician who's been elected. You know, you're not directly put into this, but what he's basically saying is everybody who got elected, that would be you at the state level, those at the federal level, you know, those who made it to Congress, Democrats and Republicans, those, you know, who made it to the Senate, Democrat and Republicans. He's basically saying every politician who got in the office got in there fraudulently because of the fact that a voter fraud that took place in areas that was concentrated with many African Americans. What is your thoughts about that?
I think you hit it right on the nail, Rev. You know, even my opponent here, my Republican opponent in the state rep race that I had, he's on Facebook talking about how I scammed the election and how that because I was one of Biden's guys here in Berks County, that I was a part of the scam that helped Joe Biden win and steal the election. So, I mean, it's crazy. It's delusional, right? I mean, it's quite frankly, I hate to say it, but it's like sore loser syndrome, right? You know, they're trying to grasp at straws. And in the process, unfortunately, they're delegitimizing our trust in the political process and the system. You know, the one thing that, you know, listen, America has its warts. There's no doubt about that. But the one thing about our elections that I think is probably better than 99% of the countries around the world is that we count every legally cast vote And we ensure that at the end of the day, winner or loser, that the people accept the results of the will of the people, and we move forward as a country, at least for the first couple of months until we get back into the partisan victory, right?
Right.
But that's not what's happening. Trump and his legal team, they're trying to not only delegitimize his own race, but delegitimize all races down the ballot. And like I said, I have my own previous Republican opponent who's accusing me of scamming the election just because of my affiliation with the Joe Biden campaign. It's ridiculous, it's ludicrous, and it's delusional.
I think it goes deeper than your affiliation with the Joe Biden campaign. I think what your opponent is basically saying here is that you beat the Republican candidate. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't even close.
So what it comes across to me, the unspoken, and here's that chaplaincy training and everything, the unspoken here and that I'm observing is that what he's saying is basically that you wasn't good enough to beat him. You know, and that is because of the color of your skin. You know, you was not good enough to beat him because of the color of your skin. And that's the stereotype that we as black and brown individuals here in America, it's like we just can't, how can you say, perform at an average level. We have to go two and three.
No, we got to do better than good.
You're absolutely correct. You summarize that well. We got to do better than good because it's sad to say, and this is something that has haunted me my whole life, and I heard this not from Caucasian folks, but I heard this from black folks, you know, coming up, my A at Chester High doesn't meet the A at a suburban school, that my A at Chester High is only a C at a suburban school. Basically, my hard effort that I put in at Chester High, it doesn't amount, or my educational standard doesn't amount to what you get at the white suburban schools. And I want to say to you, I went to school with some of these cats at the undergraduate level, at the master's level. I can't say at the doctorate level, but at the undergraduate level, especially at Duke, and I competed with the best. You know what I mean? I competed with the best, coming from Chester High, holding my own. But yet what that Republican candidate is saying is because of the color of your skin, your capacity doesn't match his. And the only way you could win is by cheating because you don't have the intellectual ability to beat him. And that infuriates me. I know we get ready to come to an end, but that infuriates me.
Oh, I mean, there's definitely, he was spewing all that stuff throughout the campaign. I was I'm too young. I don't have no experience. I'm not ready for this. And, it comes to the territory, but you're right. I mean, it's unfortunately something that we, as men of color and as people of color, we have to deal with this every day of our lives, right? And that's the thing that I think our brothers and sisters from the Caucasian persuasion don't necessarily see that and don't necessarily have to live those things, whereas you and I and millions of other people have to live that every day where, we can't just be good. We got to be better than good.
Right.
And not only that, some of the expectations and the lines are constantly shifting. And so, for example, my Republican opponent, had an active PFA out put out against him by his ex-wife.
Wow.
Right. But yet he was deemed suitable and deemed worthy enough to be the Republican nominee, whereas if I was in that shoe, if I was somebody who had an active PFA out against me, like there would be no way in God's universe, right, that I would ever be able to be the Democratic nominee and or be the state representative here elected in Redding. So there's a lot of double standards, and it's unfortunate, but it's the reality of the beast, and that's something that we have to face as people of color every day of our lives, is not only being good, but being better than good, and ensuring that everything that we do is above board, because the truth of the matter is that I know and I recognize that now that I'm a state representative, I have this huge microscope on me.
Yes, and definitely.
Folks are waiting for just one mistake, right? I know they're waiting because I hear the snakes in the grass just right now. They're waiting for me to mess up one time for them to pounce on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm forever cognizant of that. And I bear that responsibility, knowing that if I mess up, I'm messing up the opportunities for a million other Latinos across the state. And it's a heavy burden. It's something that keeps me up at night, There's no doubt about it. It's exciting, but also terrifying at the same time.
So let me close out with the following. I got to bring you back because you said something that really, you said something that allows me to really do another show, that deals with double standards. You got me? But I want to close out by saying the following. Number one, I got to give a shout out to your Reading resident, Ryan Bradley. We went to high school together. And I know you know him, know him very well. So, hey, man, Ryan, good shout out to you. But I wanted to just close out by saying the following. It's always amazing how they try to raise the bar for us, you know, and they place standards on us that they don't put on themselves. So how is it that, you know, the double standards here is you can have a woman who can dress naked, you got me, can dress naked, and be the first lady of the United States of America. But God forbid if that's Michelle Obama. She's unfit to be the first lady. You got me? You can have Barack Obama who had to push to prove that he was a Christian. And you know, I'm not going to vote for him because he's not a Christian. But here's a man that plays off, who pays off a Playboy bunny, cheats on his wife, does it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, immoral and incompetent. And yet he's the president of the United States, double standard. So I hear the music playing. We have to get ready to go. It's 56 minutes going on 57 minutes of the hour. Thank you for tuning in to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM. Manny, we're going to have you back on within a couple of weeks so we can continue this conversation, all right?
Let's do it, Rev. I appreciate your time, brother. Thank you.
All right, and take care and God bless. And for those who are listening, thank you for listening to Conversation Unplugged. Take care.
First, we need to talk about how to begin. We're all in this together. Feel free to chime in. Conversation Unplugged. Conversation Unplugged. Conversation Unplugged.